Greetings and welcome to this, which is unbelievably our fourth session of my rather wayward take on the instruments of the orchestra. Have a glance at the top of this page, or indeed the top of the email that sent many of you here. It is, of course, the logo that lots of you now are familiar with. But what's that music at the top of it? Here are those symbols translated into glorious sound. Bach, his unaccompanied cello suite in C major. It seems a shame to stop it, doesn't it? Let's hear a little more from one of the later movements, the Bourrée. And the dancer melded into one. It would be very foolish of me, I suppose, to ask you to guess what this week's instrument is. But before we start in on its repertoire, some hopefully not too trying technical details. For a start, the cello isn't its full name. It has a Rumpelstiltskin of a full name, the violoncello, which, to be quite honest, semantically is a bit of a mess. Viola is a viol. Violone is a big viol. Soup fans will remember minestra, an ordinary soup, and minestrone, a big chunky soup. Now, if you were a string instrument maker, and you had just designed a smaller version of the big violone, you'd search around for a diminutive to bung on the end. And just such a diminutive is the word cello. So the instrument became the violoncello, the little big viol. Except, of course, that the cello isn't a member of the viol family, but the bass member of the violin family. Just don't go there. The instrument, like all its contemporary orchestral relatives, has four strings, which are tuned in perfect fifths. That's five tones or seven semitones apart. As you can see from the diagram below, the notes involved are C, G, D, and A. As is true of all this group of instruments, each string has a different characteristic sound, a subject which I'll touch on perforce very briefly a bit later. One of the best ways to explore an instrument is to hear it just by itself, unaccompanied. And when it comes to music for solo instrument, the cello is more fortunate than most. We heard some of the C major suite that Bach wrote for solo cello a little earlier. It is, however, just one of the six dance suites that the composer penned for the instrument. Thank you. That was the Sarabande from the fourth suite in E-flat major. And it illustrates one of the features of string technique, the ability to play more than one note at once. This is called stopping. And since there are four strings, we have double stopping on two strings, triple stopping, three, and quadruple stopping on four. But because of the curve of the bridge, which is the bit of wood that conveys the string's vibration to the sounding body of the instrument, it is, in actual fact, very difficult, if not impossible, without undue pressure on the strings and producing the most horrendous noise, to play more than two notes simultaneously. Have a look below at the opening of the Elgar Cello Concerto. What you would expect from what is written down is this. Doesn't sound very cellistic, does it? Here's what happens in reality. I've written an approximate notation of what really happens next to the original Elgar. As you can see, in actual fact, it's two sets of double stops. This would seem to cast aspersions on Elgar's competence in writing his cello concerto. In actual fact, his notation is perfectly acceptable, and Elgar, the cellists, and everybody else would have expected exactly what he got, i.e. four double stops. Aren't conventions wonderful things? Now, let's return to our unaccompanied cello music, while simultaneously skipping forward about 200 years, because after Bach, there's pretty much a dearth of music for just cello alone until the 20th century. Then, in 1915, the Hungarian composer Zoltán Kodály wrote a sonata in B minor for unaccompanied cello. Here's how it starts. Pretty stirring stuff, as I'm sure you'll agree, which Kodály marks maestoso ma appassionato, majestic but passionate. There's lots to be said about it, but for the moment I just want to concentrate on that deeply sonorous opening quadruple stopped chord, which Kodály repeats several times in the passage we just heard. It illustrates what is, for the violin family anyway, a fairly rare feature of string technique, though guitars are forever doing it. It's called scordatura. And what scordatura means is that strings are retuned to other than their normal pitches. In order to get that, as I said, deeply sonorous quadruple stopped chord at the beginning of his sonata in B minor, and indeed throughout the sonata, Kodály asks the cellist to tune the bottom two strings of his instrument down a semitone, from C and G to B and F sharp. If you want to see that written down, you can find it among the examples below. This Kodály sonata will also serve to illustrate some of the qualities of the different strings of the cello. The lowest C string is dark and powerful. Its nearest neighbour, the G string, has similar qualities but is slightly less forceful. The D string is the quiet, shy one of the bunch, but capable of great lyricism when needed. And the A string is where the cello gets to really sing. This is Kodály using the contrast between the dark qualities of the lowest two strings, in his case the B and the F sharp string, and the singing qualities of the A string. Notice the accompaniment to that sad Magyar lament on the A string. It's just a few pizzicato notes, but how are they done? Since the right hand, whose job it is normally to play pizzicato, is very much engaged with the bow at that point. Now, I'm sure you've observed many cello players in your life, and you'll know that the cellist's left hand is the one that goes up and down the fingerboard to change the pitch. However, most of the time, only one finger of the left hand is engaged in pitch change. The other three are just sitting around doing nothing. So, in slow music, it's quite possible for one of the unused fingers to lean across and pluck one of the strings. Normally, but not always, the string is an open one. In this case, in the Kodály, it is the open F-sharp string. Left-hand pizzicato is indicated on the score by the word pizzicato, or as it's often abbreviated, P-I-Z-Z, and with a little cross underneath the relevant note. Back to the different sound qualities of the different strings. I should point out here, before a lynch mob of cellists forms, that most professional players work hard to establish a uniform quality of sound throughout the instrument. That said, it would be very difficult to deny that each of the four strings produces a slightly different timbral quality. Interestingly enough, the composer has to be rather careful with the two lowest strings of the instrument, the C and the G, despite being the tough guys of the cello sound world. Paradoxically enough, they are rather easily obscured, particularly in quieter passages. Here's Brahms dealing with that particular problem in his E minor sonata by leaving holes in the piano part for the cello to come through. while Beethoven, in his third cello sonata in A major, has an even simpler solution: leave out the piano altogether. The D string is, as I've said, the most retiring of the four siblings. Here it is, with the violins singing descant, lulling the newly born Siegfried Wagner asleep at the end of the Siegfried Idyll. And Mahler, in the peaceful, gentle melody that starts the slow movement of his fourth symphony, asks the cellists to play their melody specifically on the D string. It's marked pianissimo, very expressive, and very songful. And last, but far from least, the A string. Examples are legion, and I think I best just content myself with two. Here are the cello section, aided by their friends in the horns, clarinets, and violas, singing their hearts out in the iridescent opening of Bruckner's Seventh Symphony. Thank you. here they are, once more in fine voice, in the opening of the slow movement of Brahms' Second Symphony. If ever Elgar's famous direction of nobilmente, nobly, that you can see below at the beginning of his concerto, ever applied to just one instrument, I think it would be the cello. We have just about enough time for one more raid on the toy box, and there's still plenty of good stuff in there. We're back nearly where we started with the unaccompanied cello. But instead of Bach, it's Britten, the march from his Suite No. 1 for solo cello. Hear how the composer imitates trumpets and drums by using natural harmonics for the trumpet fanfares and striking the strings with the wooden part of the bow. The Italian term is col legno, literally with the wood, for the drums. That's it for now, I'm afraid, but please do join me next week. And let me play you out with the sound of a soprano and eight cellos let loose on Villa-Lobos' Danza from his Bachianas Brasileiras No. 5. See you next week.
Ma bene.